Admiral Richard E. Byrd of the United States Navy flew to the North Pole in 1926 and over the South Pole in 1929. In his diary, he tells of entering the hollow interior of the Earth, along with others, and traveling 17 miles over mountains, lakes, rivers, green vegetation, and animal life. He tells of seeing tremendous animals resembling the mammoths of antiquity moving through the brush. He eventually found cities and a thriving civilization. The external temperature was 74 degrees Fahrenheit. The story even got stranger. His airplane was apparently greeted by flying machines of a type that he had never seen before, escorting him to safety to a landing where he was graciously greeted by emissaries from Argatha. Very strange story indeed. In a moment, we go live down under to Australia with Kevin and Matthew Taylor. Their book, their work, The Land of No Horizon, they talk about the Hollow Earth Theory. If you have a computer, get up to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at the images they have sent us, images that will accompany their presentation tonight of the Hollow Earth, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And tonight, the Hollow Earth, Kevin and Matthew Taylor, father and son team from Australia. Kevin is an art teacher and Matthew is a web designer, but in their spare time, they've been working together on a very exciting project. They share a keen interest in science and technology, but have always been disappointed with the many mysteries surrounding us today and the poor solutions proposed to explain them. The past 13 years, they have investigated many areas of science, and their research has uncovered some fascinating links between previously unrelated subjects. By assembling the puzzle in a new way, they have stumbled upon a key at the root of all of our misunderstandings. This key concerns the structure of the planet, the Earth, an Earth they believe is hollow, expanding. The end result of all this work is their Hollow Earth book called The Land of No Horizon, both our guests. Kevin, how are you down under in Australia? Good to talk with you.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting us onto the show, George.
Oh, my pleasure. And Matthew, hello to you as well.
Hey, hello, George. How are you?
Good, good. This theory of the Hollow Earth Theory, of course, has been one of my favorite theories of all time, ever since I started reading little snippets of Admiral Byrd and his flight in the North Pole, in the work he did in the South Pole. Did both of you, we'll start with you, Kevin, did you do a lot of research into Admiral Byrd?
We didn't actually go in that direction. What we actually did was we looked for scientific evidence to support what we felt was correct. And this scientific evidence led us to believe that the current feeling of the Earth being centrally compressed and solid was incorrect. And so we actually went into the investigation many years ago, and we felt, well, we're going to find contrary evidence that will suggest that the Earth isn't hollow, and that wasn't what we found. And the end result was the Land of No Horizon. But one of the problems that we encountered all along the way was that a lot of the scientific discussions in books and so on were so complicated that you couldn't follow them. So what we decided to do was to put this all into simple, simple common language, common sense, so you don't need a science degree to understand what we're saying. We put the book together with simple language, common sense, 80 diagrams. It's a book for everyone. You don't have to be scientifically versed. It's structured, it's a book with three separate parts in it. One discusses mysteries, one discusses the solution, and the other is like a storyline of the evolution of the Earth. And we have a website, which is www.hollowearththeory.com, and that's our project, and that's why we're here tonight. We're just excited to be able to tell everyone about it.
Well, tell me a little bit, if you can, Kevin and Matthew, both of you jump in anytime you want, because you're on two separate lines. Why did you decide to go after the Hollow Earth Theory?
Well, I think initially we didn't decide to go towards the Hollow Earth Theory. It's just that our investigation has led us to that. And I guess if you think about it, the Hollow Earth Theory, in a lot of ways, it's treated with skepticism. It doesn't seem to be a valid scientific method of study, but when we investigated, we found that there was quite a lot of evidence that actually gave it a lot of scientific credibility. And so after doing all this investigation, we ended up in that place. And so we sat and thought about this and thought, okay, well, let's actually produce a book with all this information that we have found and just show just how much we should be really looking at. This is a viable alternative to the solid centrally compressed theory. Yeah, sorry. So that's where the book has come about. We didn't actually go towards that initially, but it's where we've ended up.
Is the hollow earth a secret? Is it supposed to be a governmental secret?
We don't really necessarily believe that it is. I actually feel that we've had a common understanding for many generations that the earth is solid and compressed. And the problem with that is that if anything new is viewed with great skepticism, we're already programmed to believe that. And I think it's the nature of humanity more than anything. Like, we can't rule out that there's been cover-ups at all. We can't actually rule that out. But we can never be sure either. So I think more than likely it's just a case of we believe what we were told by our previous generations, and it's fixed in our minds and we can't change.
All right, let's talk a little bit, if we can, Kevin and Matthew. When the planet was forming 4.5 billion years ago or so,
yep.
Tell me a little bit about that structure. How did this thing evolve?
Okay, well, quite often when people talk about a planet and its structure, they assume that all the mass of the planet is being attracted and compresses down to the center. But there's a few things that that aren't really taken into consideration that we've discovered. One of the first things is that the actual growing of a planet is one thing that is not really been fully realized. So, for example, when a planet is very small, it has a small mass, and matter that's attracted to a planet that's only small will only come down and be pulled onto the planet with a small amount of attraction. And as the planet gets larger, what actually happens is the mass of the planet gets larger, and so the material that comes to join the planet actually gets attracted with a lot stronger force. And effectively what's happening, this is in creating a planet that is more externally dense, that is dense on the outside rather than dense in the center. So effectively, as a planet grows, it becomes more dense and more dense on the outside as it gets bigger, and the center stays loosely compressed. And this is the first stage of a planet forming. There are many other things as well that we've discovered. That is, as matter comes and joins the planet, and then it gets buried by subsequent matter that comes afterwards, this original matter actually starts to lose weight. And when matter actually loses weight, it actually has no longer got the power to compress matter to a greater level of compression below it.
So
those two processes happening together actually form an externally dense planet.
All right, now this picture that you've sent us that we have up on the coasttocoastam.com website,
mm-hmm.
has what appears to be a central sun, a small one,
mm-hmm. yep.
and landmass and oceans. Am I looking at this correctly?
Yes, yes, definitely. There's a number of parts to this story. Obviously, the first part is the very basic geological structure of the Earth and how it forms in such a way. But we've taken that a lot further, and we talk about life, and we talk about the environment and so on as well. And we definitely believe that the inside of the Earth is definitely able to support life with a central sun. And very much in a similar way to the outside, it will have precipitation and a perfect environment, basically, for life to actually evolve.
Where did this little sun come from? How did that get there?
Okay, the current theory is the dynamo theory, and there are a number of problems with that. First of all, we know that the magnetic field originates from a point near the center, but that point is not actually fixed in regard to the rest of the planet. It actually has a westward drift, and it reverses in its polarity every so long. And it's also tilted at 11 degrees. And so these things indicate that whatever it is that's causing this magnetic field is not strongly connected to the Earth. Now, the dynamo theory suggests that it's the spinning of the Earth that actually causes the actual magnetism and the magnetic poles. But what we've discovered is that the central magnetic reaction is actually formed in a much different way. As we know, that material, all matter, emits radiation. And of course, rock and matter on the outside of the planet, this radiation just dissipates into space and we don't really notice it. But on the inside of the planet, what we find is with this inner-facing surface, this concentrates and focuses this energy into a central point. Now, we believe that the atmosphere inside the planet will reach to a thin state right across the entire planet. And it's this focused state of energy focusing on the atmosphere that actually will actually form a nuclear reaction which will change the mass of the atmosphere into energy, and this is what we believe powers the central sun. Now, we don't believe it has mass in itself, but it's just that's the location where this reaction is taking place.
Does the sun move at all, or you know, does the inside rotate or anything like that?
It doesn't appear to. It probably very slightly the location of the magnetic field is slightly drifting westward, so it is moving slowly, very slightly, but generally remaining in the centre of the planet, as best as we can see at this point of time.
Yeah, I guess what we should say is that the sun in the centre does not have a mass. It's just the location of this reaction taking place. So
okay.
It's not something that can fall out to the outer shell, for example.
But it provides heat and light.
Definitely, yes.
Yes.
With for example, Einstein's famous equation E equals mc squared, we know that when matter is reduced to its energy, it is an enormous amount of energy is released. And so the process taking place in the center of the planet would quite easily have enough energy and light and heat to light the inside world.
If you were in the hollow Earth, what would it look like? What would it feel like? Would you even know that you are inside of a planet?
Well, that's the amazing thing here. If you're inside the Earth, and you didn't know that the Earth was hollow, you would be amazed by what you saw all around you. The thing is, first of all, when you're on the outside of the planet, you can't see very far because there's a horizon surrounding you. But on the inside, everything would seem fairly unusual because the land, instead of just disappearing behind the horizon, would actually raise up behind the clouds in the distance. And so, therefore, you'd have this strange change of perspective in the ground. In fact, the horizon would be on the clouds. But there'd be many other things inside the Earth that you would actually weigh less, because on the outside of the Earth, you've got the total mass of the planet beneath you pulling you down, which makes me 70 kilos. But inside the planet, you have only a smaller mass beneath you pulling you down, and you have a mass that's around you, which actually neutralizes some of your weight. So inside the Earth, you would be a lot lighter inside the Earth. But there'd be a lot of other things in there too, like you would have, you know how we sort of say, oh, we'll see you tomorrow, or we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Inside the Earth, you've got one long day. It's just an endless one long day. So today, tomorrow, yesterday don't really mean anything.
It's all the same, yeah.
Yes, and you've got a constant climate inside the Earth too. And this has been advantageous for the evolution of life within the Earth as well.
Okay, when you say constant climate, Kevin, does that mean it doesn't rain, it doesn't snow, it just stays the same?
No, I don't exactly mean that. When I say a constant climate, if you take a particular season, say where you are in Oregon, for instance, and you take a particular time of the year, imagine that staying the same all the time. So you still get rain, you still get warm and cool, slight changes in temperature, you still get breezes, but you don't go into winter or summer, you don't have nighttime, you just got this constant warmth all the time. And so everything inside the Earth has this gentle, friendly atmosphere, which is very good for the evolution of life. And this is the thing. This is where the intelligence of humanity has come from.
And we're going to get into that, too. Now, here on the surface, we've got a gorgeous benefit of looking into the heavens, looking at the full moon, looking at the stars. When you're in the hollow Earth and you look up, what do you see?
Well, this is it. You see, when we look out into space, if you think about it, we can see for millions and trillions of miles, can't we? We can see
right.
Other. But inside the Earth, when life evolved inside the Earth, I mean, life didn't know that the outside existed. You've got to realize that too when they evolved. The greatest distance they could see was across the expanse. And even then, they can't see directly across the expanse because the sun's in the middle. Can you imagine a situation where the shadows never move? All the time, the sun's in the same spot. You've got trees that create shadows along the ground. You've got vegetation that's just evolved to grow in these shadows.
See, I'm picturing that if you were in the hollow Earth and you looked up, what you would see is the landmass from the other side.
You would definitely
looking down on you.
You would definitely see land masses, and particularly larger areas of different vegetation and so on, and particularly the land and the sea, and the sea areas. But if you were to imagine looking straight up, you would see the sun. And as you look away from that, the flare of the sun would dissipate, and you'd start to see these shapes of these continents that's suspended up above you. Then if you continue tracing your eye downwards, eventually you'll get to a spot where, as the atmosphere is leaving from where you are and curving up, you're actually looking through a lot more atmosphere, and so everything gets blurred away and you just see the atmosphere. And then if you have low-lying clouds, for example, then you will actually see a horizon on the bottom of the clouds curving up, and then you'll start to see the actual land masses come towards you. Also, George, if I can just cut in there,
yeah.
Can you imagine standing in Oregon looking west, and you'd be able to see Australia?
Right.
You'll be able to wait. But the thing is, too, from inside the Earth, you really get a feeling of the size of the planet we live on. And this is an amazing thing. You actually see the dimensions. It would be a bit like being in orbit around the Earth. Of course, the difference is you're looking through two different layers of atmosphere, and the atmosphere may be a little bit deeper inside the Earth too. And so it may not be as clear as space, but you get this kind of a feeling of being inside a huge ball.
Okay, when the two of you then put together the Land of No Horizon,
yes.
Where did you go for the research? Where did you go for the data, for the information to come up with this theory that we're talking about tonight, that the Earth is indeed hollow?
Well, I think we basically had our eyes and ears open all of this time, and we've got information from a huge variety of sources. When we started this was long before the internet, and it's amazing how much we've discovered just in the last few years since we've been online.
Right.
But we obviously went to the library. We've found lots of different books on different topics. We've discovered a number of different scientists who actually believe or have discovered some parts of what we're actually saying as well. For example, there's one scientist, S. Warren Carey, who's actually a geologist from Tasmania, and he's written a book called Earth, Universe, Cosmos, and it's the premier Earth expansion book. He's actually written a number of books on Earth expansion, and there's plenty of other people that believe in that as well. So that obviously is fitted into the hollow Earth concept. The difference, of course, between what he has discovered and what we've discovered is we provide the hollow Earth as a means for explaining the expansion of the Earth, whereas he doesn't actually have a cause for it. It's left out in the open.
Go ahead.
And of course, there's lots of other things as well that we've discovered that have helped us along the way. So basically, we were just looking at everything we could. And we've done lots of research and so on, and we've found a lot of stuff, particularly with geology, that's helped us, because I think that's the foundation of the hollow Earth theory. I think all of the information about life and the origins of humanity, it sort of fits on top of that. So we wanted to get the groundwork done first, and that's pretty much what we've done.
Is the entrance to the hollow Earth through the North Pole, through the South Pole?
No, we don't actually believe that. One of the things there is, in that particular case, we don't actually mention that in our book. We feel, even though these reports, that we couldn't support it with enough evidence to say that there was actually an entrance in the North Pole. Further investigation goes ahead, avenues will be opened and more things may be found out. But in actual fact, we believe there is a way through the shell of the North Pole, but not as currently believed.
All right, stay with us, Kevin and Matthew. I want to get more of your views on just what the opening or openings might look like, where they might be. And then eventually tonight, we're going to talk about whether there's inhabitants in the hollow Earth, animals. I think you'll be very, very shocked. what we're about to find out. Well, there's a website I look at quite a bit when I want to get some more information on things that might be going on in the Middle East. They have been very, very accurate in the past. It is reporting tonight, DEPCA files, that U.S. Marines are locked in a battle with Syrian troops, now Syrian troops, after crossing the border from Iraq into Syria at a point west of a town called Al-Qaim. Both sides apparently have suffered casualties. U.S. soldiers crossed over after Damascus was given an ultimatum to hand over a group of senior commanders belonging to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's Al-Qaeda force. According to U.S. intelligence, the group had fled to Syria to escape an American attack in Mosul. You remember that situation. Syrian border guards then apparently opened fire on the American forces. So if there are any updates tonight, I'll follow up on this. But DEPCA has been pretty accurate before. No other media is reporting this at this time. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue our discussion about the Hollow Earth with Kevin and Matthew Taylor. They're in Australia. I'm in St. Louis. Our folks are back in Los Angeles. All of us will get together in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. All right, we're talking with Kevin and Matthew Taylor. Their book, The Land of No Horizon, their theory of the hollow earth, and we're going to really get into at the top of the hour just who or what may be living there. Kevin or Matthew, which one of you wants to take this? We were talking about the entrances. Obviously, there's got to be some. Are they sprinkled all over the planet? Maybe they're not as big as I thought they would be if they were coming in off the poles, for example.
George, this is a really interesting part of the whole theory. The holes through the planetary wall or the planetary shell, we usually call it the planetary wall, but planetary shell, are related to the Great Flood. And they're also related to the Bermuda Triangle and other areas of the ocean where disappearances have occurred. Inside the Earth, outgassing that produces atmospheres and oceans built up deeper because of this smaller area above an inside sphere. This built pressure. Now, those who created humanity and who warned Noah of the Great Flood actually released the waters through the channel, through channels, through the planetary wall to the outside to create a balance of pressure, right?
Interesting.
When you look at Genesis, see, we've gone into Genesis. Now, Genesis is a book of history. This is not a religious book, but it's a book of history, and therefore we have to take it into consideration with evidence.
Okay.
And they talk about the fountains of the great deep were risen and the windows of the heavens were opened up. Now, if you think about it, when this excess ocean from the inner world, which had to form because of the conforms of a hollow sphere, it eroded the channels cut out. Now we have a situation where the oceans are deeper because it's balanced, not through the melting of an ice age, and where these openings have been eroded away, we have a false sea floor. And what happens is the sediments have settled back down into these openings and disguised them. And once you get currents or differences between the outer and inner world, these false sea floors move up and down and currents travel through them to the inner world. Now, this is what we're experiencing in the Bermuda Triangle. These are the only openings we know of, but the thing about it is that in order to release the floodwaters successfully and evenly, there were many channels cut all over the world, and they're places in the bottom of the ocean because that's where the planetary shell is thinnest. One of these is at the North Pole. That's why we get pollen and we get warm sea currents where they shouldn't be at the North Pole. But as it being a huge polar hole that we can actually go into, I don't really believe that. We haven't found enough evidence to really support that. We could be wrong in this area. But these holes, the people that actually visit us, the UFO people that actually visit us, come through from the inner world. We don't know exactly where they come through, but we know they cut these channels. They say it in their texts that they gave us thousands of years ago.
But you believe then some of these channels are blocked at this point?
We did.
In our book, we go into great detail in our book, and it's a bit hard on a radio program to go into great details, but we did say that some eroded more than others. Do you know the Bonin Trench off Japan? They did a reading in the bottom of the trench there in 1976, I think it was, and they did a reading later, and the floor of the trench had risen nearly 2 kilometres, 1,800 metres. And they said it's almost as if the bottom of the trench is in a state of fluctuation or floating. And that's exactly what's happening. That is because that is not a trench. It's actually an opening through to the inner world. This is where one of the places where the flood waters were released. That's why we get these theories on there being several evenly spaced out channels all over the world where different funny things happen.
So the flood itself that Genesis talks about, yes, was done intentionally because they had to relieve what, rising ocean levels in the hollow portion of the planet?
Well, the whole planet was in a state of imbalance. And until that water was released, there was always a danger that if there was a meteorite impact that ruptured the planetary wall or planetary shell, they could have a major catastrophe. So they decided to release it in a careful way. And if you look at the Genesis text, it talks about after the flood, a wind passed over the earth, and then the flood waters receded. Now, that wind was the excess atmosphere escaping. Once the excess atmosphere escaped, the water was able to return. And one thing that people don't seem to think of when they talk about the Great Flood of Noah is what happened to the water after the flood? How could it couldn't just dry up? The waters flowed back into the planet. That's what happened. And when it flowed back into the planet, it opened these holes much larger. And then we've got these unstable areas of ocean.
What kind of technology did they have for this, which happened thousands and thousands of years ago? For them to have done that, they must have been pretty advanced.
Well, that's why in the beginning of the show, we were saying how the environment inside the Earth was more friendly for evolution. That meant that they could evolve to intelligence much quicker or overtake us on the outside. So they are thousands of years ahead of us. They're probably listening to this very show right now.
Are they Earthlings or did they come from another system?
We believe, we have good reason to believe they evolved on the Earth. We have a good reason to believe that. By the way, George, another thing we should get into in a bit later on is we've just discovered floods on Mars now, and you've seen all the photos of these flood channels on so on Mars.
Oh, sure, cutting their way through, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, Mars has such a rarefied atmosphere that it can't support water in a liquid form, yet this huge volume of flood, this flood is related to the flood on Earth. It's all to do with the natural evolution of a planet.
You think Mars is hollow as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing there, George, is this, that if there is water coming through the surface of Mars at the present time, as is seen on a lot of the photos from NASA, they certainly look as though they're very fresh, these erosion channels. And in cases, it looks damp, as though the water still comes to the surface. And NASA themselves have actually suggested that the water is still rising. So if the water is still rising to the surface, that means a few things. It means there is still an atmosphere inside Mars. It means there is heat inside Mars because water would freeze if there's no heat. Therefore, where you've got heat and you've got atmosphere and you've got water, you've got the potential for life. Who knows what we're going to find inside Mars?
Well, that's true. The land of no horizon, you talk about an expanding planet Earth. Explain that.
Yes. The first stages of an Earth forming is the actual process of the hollow forming inside. But we believe there is a second stage, and that is a stage of expansion. And what happens there is the actual shell of the Earth, under its own gravitational attraction, kind of rolls out like a piece of pastry, and it effectively makes the Earth expand. Now, the process of this is the force we've been looking for to explain continental drift. Now, we know that all the continents were once joined together to form a supercontinent. A continent.
Right.
Now, this process of the Earth expanding has broken up this supercontinent into the pieces that we see today. And what we've found is that 200 million years ago, before there were any ocean basins, all the continents of the Earth today actually created a complete crust of a much smaller Earth, about one-third its size of today.
So you believe it's getting bigger and bigger?
Yes, that's why we have places like the San Andreas Fault. That is just simply the Earth creaking into shape.
That's interesting theory. When we had the tsunami on December 26. What damage, if any, did it do to the hollow portion of the planet?
I don't believe it would, because we're talking about a great distance between there and the inside. There was obviously an earthquake of some sort, which was the planet just creaking into shape. Then there was I'm not sure exactly what happened then, because we haven't actually researched into this. But when we consider the thickness of the planetary shell, which we can't confirm exactly how thick it is, I'd be very surprised if it had much of an effect on the inside. However, while we're talking about earthquakes, one real mystery about earthquakes is the earthquake vibrations don't travel through the planet. They travel around it. Now, if a planet is sensory compressed and solid, why doesn't it travel through it? It travels around it. There's a shadow zone. And the Earth, after an earthquake, it rings like a bell. So perhaps on the inside surface below that tsunami area, they would have experienced some tremor. But whether it may have even been greater on the inside, they may have had a tsunami too. It's very hard to really tell. It'd be a bit of guesswork.
Well, I got to tell you, it's an incredible theory. There are others who have speculated about the planet itself being hollow as well. And I wonder why mainstream science, Kevin and Matthew, really hasn't investigated this, or have they? And for some profound reason, they just don't want the world to know. You know, we talked about governmental conspiracy.
We believe it's all cut back to Matthew in a second, but we believe, you know, a few hundred years ago, everyone in the whole world thought the Earth was flat, and the whole world was wrong, right? Now, then they also
thought the sun revolved around the Earth.
Yes,
that's right.
Yeah. All sorts of funny things. The oceans are right. But then, once they realized the Earth was round and it was proven, there was a sudden surge of interest, and the solid compressed Earth theory came into being. Everything pointed to the center of the Earth when it's dropped. And as an assumption was made without proper investigation using primitive science. Like some occult, I suppose, in a kind of a way, that stuck with us for generations. And now science has built other theories on top of that. It's like building a skyscraper on shaky foundations. Now we're confronted with so many mysteries because of this. This is the one place where man's made a mistake. And I believe this calculation of the Earth being compressed and solid is going to be our greatest miscalculation in human history. We've missed the most exciting thing about our planet. And this is what we go into great depth in our book, The Land of No Horizon.
You know, when we talked about the flood, and you talk about Genesis being really more of a science-type book, historical book, as opposed to religious or biblical. But be that as it may, if we assume that, what about Noah and the Ark, and how did that all happen?
Well, with Noah and the Ark, first of all, we tend to think of Noah as a man and his family. If you go back to the ancient Hebrew text in the biblical text, by the way, we're not saying that the Bible isn't a religious book. We're just saying that we're treating the history side of it.
Okay.
Just to get that clear, because we don't want to cross people out there. But basically, with Noah, we're saying that he wasn't actually one person, but actually it was a generation of people, and it's actually stated like that in the Bible. It talks about the generations of Noah, and so we tend to believe that this is kind of like a simplification or this story to help explain this part of what's happened in human history, and it's done in a simple way so we could understand without having to go into the details of what's actually happened. The other thing too, George, is this about Noah, that Noah lived for 600 years, or that the project took 600 years.
Sure.
And so how does a man live for 600 years? But see, when you talk about a race of people, this was a project of the inside people who created us, and who gave us all the other Genesis about Adam and Eve and so on. And it was a joint project with them and the race of Noah to save as much as they could. And there's 250 tribes all over the world that record this great flood, but not all of them were building arks. Some of them moved to higher ground, and some built smaller boats. And there was all sorts of different things, different reports of this great flood. But there's a lot of history, and some of it's in America too, about this great flood that took place about 4,500 years ago.
In terms of depth, from the crust of the planet to the point where we're in the hollow Earth, what are we talking about in terms of miles?
I have to say in kilometres because I'm not familiar with miles. I have to do a quick conversion for you. But we don't know precisely, but I'd say anywhere from 300 kilometres to 500 kilometres would sound about right. One of the things
so that's
that
about
we actually
200
got,
miles, 250 miles, 275
yeah.
miles. But that's a calculated guess, and we probably shouldn't build theories on that without further investigation. But
all right.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things we have found is you have earthquakes on the surface of the planet, and we can detect them, and we know where they're coming from. But we also have a thing called deep focus earthquakes. And what tends to happen is there's a lot of earthquakes near the surface, but then you go down to a certain level, there isn't many after that. And then there's another series of lot of earthquakes, and that seems to be what we would correlate with the surface or the inside of the planet.
What about the core?
When we go beyond that, we don't find earthquakes at all. So it seems that it just seems to be on the surface of the inside and outside crust where the earthquakes will appear.
Interesting. What about the core? Science has talked about a core being in the middle of the planet.
We don't believe that at all. And we even with our scientific investigation, we fail to see how they've come to that conclusion. Quite frankly, we really did believe when we went into this project that we would find evidence here and there that would contradict what we felt was the case. And in 13 years investigation, we actually found nothing. And we were looking because we felt, well, if we don't find it, other people will. And we actually found nothing, only the desire for things to be so or the belief for things to be so. It's almost welded in our minds about the center of the earth. And even people that read our book have said to us that, you know, what you says makes so much sense to us. It's got to be right, but I can't get my head around it because I'm been conditioned to believe the earth is structured this way.
Would you both love to undertake a mission inside the planet?
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
I don't think you'd come back.
I'd go. I mean, I'd go. Maybe we'd broadcast a show down there.
Well, they may be listening to us, so we want to come down there.
Well, I tell you, you two are from Australia. This brings back a new meaning to the word down under, doesn't it?
Yes, it certainly does, doesn't it?
Next hour.
You know, George, an interesting thing here. Can you imagine what these people could tell us? If we came to face-to-face with the people who created humanity, just imagine for a moment how they could educate us or medical science, tell us about our history. It's like we've lost our parents, and we're an orphan race, a species on the earth, not race, species on the earth. And it's almost like we're looking for our parents. Imagine if we came face-to-face with these people. Imagine the technologies they'd have. I mean, they cut through the planetary wall, you know, 4,500 years ago.
Are they the gods?
Well, I believe so. I believe UFOs, gods, and the inner earth people are all the one thing, and it's just a different way people interpret it. Again, we don't want to step on anyone's toes when it comes to religious beliefs. We believe that if you believe in the truth and you feel that what you believe is the truth, then if we find the truth, it shouldn't affect your belief. It's as simple as that.
That's true.
Yes.
What do you think has been going on then when we have nuclear explosions, nuclear testing? I would guess that disrupts whatever inhabitants there might be in this hollow planet.
Well, I think they're probably concerned about what we're doing to the outside world, but also they are leaving it up to us because we need to learn for ourselves. It's a bit like a child. You say to a child, don't touch the stove, you'll burn yourself. The child has to touch the stove and burn itself before it believes its parents. Mm-hmm. And they're our parents, and they're saying, well, you know, you have to work this out for yourself, and we're better people. Humanity's starting to come around. We're starting to get better. We're starting to get more compassionate. Look at September 11, how compassionate everyone was about that all over the world here in Australia. And the thing is, people are becoming more compassionate, and it's happening naturally. It mustn't be forced on it. It has to happen. So they're probably watching everything we do, but I'm sure they were concerned when we started exploding a few atomic bombs, yes.
If something happened to the atmosphere of us, those of us living on the surface, would that affect them?
Yes, it certainly would, but it may not affect them immediately. Because now that we've had the flood, there's obviously a connection between the inside and the outside world through the oceans. For example, if we had a nuclear winter on the outside of the planet, I'm sure that this would feed through to the inside. And
okay.
This is one of the reasons why I would be so concerned.
All right, Matthew and Kevin, stay with us. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Because next hour, we're going to talk about these inhabitants, the UFOs, And I want you to also explain what you believe the inside of the planet looks like in terms of buildings, cities, structures. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.